Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. So, today's episode, buckle up, get ready for quite a ride. I had one of the most amazing conversations with Nova Reed, who is a diversity consultant and campaigner, and I've been doing her white privilege course since December. And I wanted to get started on the course before I got into this conversation with her for a number of reasons, which I explain in the episode. This conversation around race and anti-racism and white privilege, if you're new to this conversation, if you've never really got into this conversation before, if you're a white person, this can be quite triggering. It may be uncomfortable. It often is at the start of this conversation, the start of this journey. But yeah, really invite you to sit with that discomfort if there is any, and invite you to come and do the work with Nova that I've been doing. I feel like it's big work for us all to do together. And it's the conversation filled Nova and I with a lot of hope and a lot of excitement for the future. So I hope it does the same for you.
When I listened to it, I did feel vulnerable listening to it. And I needed to just sit in stillness afterwards just to let it sink in and process it. But what I loved about it, what I loved about this episode is that you both brought so much fun and lightness and laughter into a conversation that's so often shrouded in stigma and secrecy and silence. And so it was really refreshing to hear it being talked about in a way that did have that light and shade. And I think that's a really amazing thing to open it up for the future and let people know that, yes, it's uncomfortable, but that's part of the process, really.
Yes,
if
exactly.
You're new to the conversation, then of course it's going to be triggering for you. It may trigger your defensiveness.
Yes.
That's totally normal. So just sit with that discomfort and just listen to it from a place of curiosity.
Nova, we're here.
We are.
We're doing it. We're finally doing this podcast episode that we talked about doing. I was trying to think when I first said I really want you to come on the podcast and talk about race and white privilege. It was just as I signed up to the course when it launched.
So December.
It was December. Mm. Yeah. And I didn't feel ready at the time to do it for a number of reasons. First of all, because I wanted to have started the course and to have been doing it rather than just like, I've signed up to it, let's all do this. Secondly, because I was too afraid to do it then. So we could talk, I'll definitely be talking more about that, but I felt like at the time I had so much fear and shame around talking about race, and I was very afraid of saying the wrong thing and probably very afraid of what might be found out, like, you know, the beliefs that are under there. And now I'm very comfortable with saying, as a white person, I have racism in me.
Woo!
And it's so liberating. And I'm like, yes, okay. My name's Nina Barker and I have racism in me. Oh God, thank God it's all out. Because then, of course, and I've now been on such a journey and we're going to talk about this today, but that's when the healing can begin.
100%.
And there is something, this is the hardest work I've ever done. Absolutely the hardest work I've ever done. And it is so exciting to be doing it. And I feel so lucky to have met you. And I tell you what, probably about a year and a half before I did, I had been speaking to friends saying, I want to do this work around racism, anti-racism, but I don't know what the work is.
Yes.
I don't know who's doing it. I don't know what I'm looking for. And then I was following Leila Saad, and then she said, find the people where you are from who are doing this work. And I knew about you. I'd heard about you on A Life More Inspired. I'd heard you on the podcast with Nicola. But I don't think I'd realised that you were doing this work. And the reason I'm also excited about us doing it now is because since that time, you've like risen up, and I mean taken the stage, because before you were doing a few different things and then you launched the program. I was like, oh, you do white privilege stuff. Oh, this is brilliant. This is what I've been looking for. And then suddenly you've become like this, to me, this powerhouse on Instagram.
Thank you.
Of anti-racism. And I have such phenomenal admiration for the work that you do. The strength and the courage it must take every day to show up, and the racist attacks that you get on a day-to-day. I genuinely don't know where. I'm going to start with this question.
Okay.
Where do you get that strength from to do that? Do you know?
No, I think I'm lucky that I come from a family that is very rooted and very supportive and very nurturing. So I had similar programming to my black peers. You've got to work twice as hard. Da, 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 da. So I've always had that programming, and it's good in one way because it means I am naturally quite resilient. It also means I'm a perfectionist, which can be to my detriment, but we'll talk about that later. But it means I already have a foundation that's quite strong. I also, part of my career path led me to working in mental health and disability as a caregiver for nearly 10 years.
Wow.
And as part of that process, I needed to go through extensive training, which included introductory psychotherapy, lots of mental health training, and being able to hold space and support people who are suicidal, who have bipolar disorder, who are schizophrenic. And you can't support people unless you have your shit together.
Yeah.
So as part of that process, I had to go through something called clinical supervision every 2 weeks. It's a form of counseling.
Yeah.
And I've been through my own counseling, and I also studied as an NLP coach. And part of that is going through your own growth as well. So yeah. I've done a lot of the work on myself. I would never have been able to do this work 3 years ago. And I think the reason why you're seeing me more now is because I also have a coach, and they're like, Nova, no one else is claiming this space. Why are you hiding? Rise up. And so
that's
what I'm doing. And it's not easy. I grew up in Hertfordshire. I one of very few families of colour. I experienced racism at a young age. At seven, I already realised that my value, or already felt that my value as a human being was less, because I just wasn't seeing anyone around me who looked like me in a positive way. I remember associating the only black people I saw was children in poverty on TV adverts. And that's with me having strong parents who are together, who were telling me that I have value and I'm worthy and that I'm beautiful. The programming I got around me was far stronger than that. So I went through a period where there was a lot of self-hate, where I felt very much less than, and it wreaked havoc on my self-esteem, which is why I've gone through therapy, coaching, inner work for myself. And just at every life event, there was this silence of just not being represented. And I thought, you know what? I'm tired of this. I'm tired of not being seen, and I'm tired of not being represented. And more to the point, I'm tired of hearing the excuses. I need to be the change, and I need to model it. And if it's not there, I need to be it. And that's been my journey.
Oh my God, it gives me goosebumps. It is just so powerful. It's, yeah. And like I say, thank you for the work that you do, because it is hard. And it's hard to put yourself in that position. And I'm excited to be part of the movement and part of the change, and to have joined your course.
It's great.
So we're going to talk about the course. But I asked you just before pressing record, and then wished I'd press record because you answered so brilliantly. What would you like to talk about in this podcast?
Racism,
yeah.
White privilege, and also the huge fear around having conversations, and also something to reframe and empower people to act. Because I think racism is such a huge thing. It's a taboo subject. No one wants to talk about it. Everyone's frightened of saying the wrong thing, feeling guilty, feeling shamed, and we just don't make progress. And I think people associate racism with a single act of conscious overt hate from one person to another based on skin color.
Yeah.
And actually the more insidious racism and the more systemic racism is done by everyday, well-meaning, good, liberal, kind human beings who have subconscious racism that they are not aware of. And because they're frightened
of even entering into this territory, or of even seeing race, of even talking about this race, this is why we're still talking about racism, and it's still a problem, and it's still holding people back, and it's still in systems in 2019. So it's actually the powerful silent majority who have the power to make change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am, like you just described me.
Yeah.
That is me. That's me and all of my white, liberal, kind, good friends. And there was a there was a guest on Reniero Lodge's podcast. I can't remember who he was, but he was saying the biggest problem are the white liberals in creative industries.
Oh, like, God.
Oh no. Oh, God, more bad news. That's again, hello, yes, I'm here. And then, of course, Leila Saar's open letter to white spiritual women.
Oh, yes.
Like, again, hi, here I am. So, and I can now laugh about it. And, you know, because I've now gone through the process and I've started going on the journey. This is a lifetime of work.
For sure.
And this is not a journey I expect. We won't see the full change in our lifetime.
No.
And that's okay too.
Yeah.
So we're working longer term. Again, it excites me. And yeah. Do you know what? I used to watch films. This is one of the little kind of awakening moments where I'd watch films of, say, 1950s America in the Deep South, and you'd see the overt racism that today we're like shocked about. And, you know, you'd see the white characters, and I'd be like, I'd be one of those that stands up and says, no, this must not go on. And I'd be with them. And then I'd be like, very slowly dawning on me, so are you being that person in today? Because that stuff is still going on.
Yeah.
It's just in a different way. And now it's hidden.
Yeah.
And so slowly but surely, it was hearing myself say those things and be like, oh no, I'm not being that white ally. Yeah. I'm actually being the one that's being quiet and saying nothing and allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
So it was kind of one of my first wake-up calls.
Yeah, I think it's about beyond being a good person. I'm not racist, I'm a good person.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
You know, racism has got nothing to do with you being good or bad, and just releasing that narrow-minded view and just recognising that actually you have to be actively anti-racist. You can't just sit and be nice.
Yeah.
Not enough.
And having friends of colour.
No.
Boyfriends, girlfriends, husband, wives, children of colour.
Yes.
It doesn't,
you can still be racist and have a child of colour. Yes, you can.
Yeah, and I've seen that. I've seen that in families, and it's scary how that can happen. Before we get on into talking about this, I want to talk about the being good and also having racism in you. I'm saying it that way because I say being racist, it's too triggering.
Yeah.
But before we get into this, I want to talk a little bit about that. About the listening to bring to this, particularly for those people listening who are white or pass as white, because it's important, isn't it, that to just acknowledge the ways in which we do get triggered as we're hearing it. So jumping into, but I'm not one of those, or denial, or yes, but hang on, but, you know, and kind of, so can you talk a bit about that, of how to bring what not to do
when you're getting into the conversation about race,
and what commonly the white people do, the well-intended, kind, good, liberal white people will do in conversations like this that actually shut it down and stop it from progressing.
Yeah, it's something called white fragility, and it's a huge automatic response of defensiveness and an inability to process, be in the room, talk about anything to do with racial stress. Because as a white person, you have been protected from racial stresses. Mm-hmm. As a black person, I have been exposed to them. I experienced them. I can talk about race with my black mates with ease because we have been raised to speak about it. Whereas generally speaking, white people haven't. So anytime there's any conversation around race inequality, there's just automatic defensiveness. And I always say, if you're in a state of defensiveness, you've lost the capacity to listen. And when you've lost the capacity to listen, it shuts down any opportunity for transformation or conversation or growth. It's just being, I think language is key, because we are still only associating a racist with somebody in the Ku Klux Klan who's probably unintelligent, probably white male, and horrible, violent, aggressive,
yeah.
the people that we shame on social media, any form of conversation of race or suggesting that you might have racist views within you, you automatically think, well, I'm not like that yeah. Ku Klux Klan man. No. And I'm gonna protest against that. I'm not gonna accept that. And then that's it. But so for me, it's about educating on what racism is in all of its forms, the insidious, the systemic, the subconscious, the coded. That's the type of racism that I, as an anti-racism educator, are talking about. I'm not trying to educate the Ku Klux Klan person. They're not going to be on my page. I'm not talking to them. I'm talking to you. So it's about being able to recognise that racism is much broader than the dictionary definition.
Yeah.
And also happens to us subconsciously because most of us have been born and raised in a Western society, particularly in the UK or US for listeners, that has legalized slavery, that has legalized treating black people as subhuman. There are going to be byproducts of that programming that are in you.
Yeah.
Because you have been taught to operate and believe that white is normal, white is the default, and white means superiority in some way. Nobody might be explicitly saying that to you anymore, but that is the programming that you will have received. And we all have received the same programming. It's one of the reasons why some black people and people of colour are also internalising racism and are also projecting race hate onto each other. So... people of colour aren't immune from doing this white privilege work either. It's why I have lots of people in different communities, like the East Asian community. There's a lot of racism between East Asian and black people. There's a lot of racism between black people and South Asian. Mm-hmm. So the work is universal because we've all had the same programming about one being more superior than the other.
Yeah. And it's deep, it's tribal stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it? It's like deep rooted.
Centuries old.
Yeah. And you know what's... it's interesting talking about that. And actually, when you were talking about how you've got that deep rootedness from your family, I don't know if I've said to you this before, but I was watching, someone sent me a link to a video about when you're doing anti-racism and white privilege work, to connect to your gut and to breathe into your gut because of the root chakra and the grounding.
Yes. Lovely.
Rather than being up here in your head and trying to process it up here, ground yourself in there. And it's made such a difference.
Lovely.
That it's kind of coming from there. But yeah, I think it's once I understood that having racist views and racist programming in me completely unconsciously was inescapable and unavoidable
100%.
Because of the society I was born into.
Yes.
Then it's just like, we've all got it. No one's immune. Yeah. Right. So we're going to start there because what I feel like my soul has been calling to do this work, and my ego definitely 100% wants nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Because first of all, the identity crisis around, but I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God. It brought my ego to my knees.
Yeah,
amount of like, and so even originally, you know, when I first started reading about white fragility and you know, all about that, I just triggered left, right, and center because, and I wanted to get angry and I was immediately defensive and all this stuff, but just sitting with it and sitting
100%.
With it and listening. And I think it's, you know, so much of the role of white people is to listen.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then listen for a while and listen. And as you get comfortable with, okay, all right, it's in all of us.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that I was listening to the woman who directed 13th.
Yeah, Ava.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she said in it, if you believe in a world where there's justice for all and respect for all, then you need to be doing this work.
100%.
And I used this thing on comments on your one of your posts the other day because it gave me the words. I was like, yeah, that's it. So it's back to that, you know, seeing the films of 1950s America and, oh, yeah, I would have been one of them. Actually, it turns out that I wouldn't. But now I'm starting on that journey. I feel there's so much more to do, but I think it's time for us all. And particularly the white liberals,
yeah.
to stand up and to say, okay, let's do this work. And that work starts on the inside,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is what your course is all about.
And also acknowledging, rather than rejecting, well, I don't need to do this work because I'm a good person, I'm a liberal, I'm woke. I use that in inverted commas. Liberals need to do the work more than anyone else. They are the hardest people to get to do this work because they're ego driven. So in my course, there's a module towards the end around ego. And
not got there.
Yeah. At the end for a reason. And it's all around that, because if you remove your ego, you just become more open, more receptive, and then you learn to operate from a place where you're actually serving the higher purpose, which isn't you or your ego. Mm. It's about ending racism and stopping causing harm to people in your life, people who you care about, in the way that you parent, in how you operate, in people who you come into connection with. And we all have a part in reducing harm by taking on this work.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's also looking at what is the world that how do I want the world to be? And I want it to be equal for all. I don't want to be living in a world where, white supremacy. And so if I don't want that, who's going to change that?
I know.
Hey, you guys, how are you getting on with changing that for us all? It's like, oh no.
It's me. I had an online debate with somebody who was just feeling totally helpless with the way in which she's seeing the socio-political climate unfold, seeing more overt acts of hate being reported and, whatever's going on with politics, and just feeling totally helpless. And they said, I wish there was like another Martin Luther King. I was like, love. You need to look internally. Stop waiting for someone else to lead us. It has to come from you. And you can start today. There's nothing stopping any one of these people from starting today. Nothing other than ego.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that what I'm so pleased with, in a way, is that how I was so much like that. The difficult nut to crack, that's where I come from. And so to be able to have gone on this journey and be able to say, look, I've been there, but also now having started doing your course, noticing the difference and from a personal point, the greater connection that I feel.
Yeah.
And I was talking to you before we hit record about how even energetically, being around people, noticing how I respond differently, and it's just that an openness and connection and how people respond. People have respond to me differently. And that in itself, just from a purely selfish personal point of view, isn't, because
it's
at the end of the day, we all want connection. And it's like, oh, yes, this is the stuff Brené Brown talks about. But also recognizing how, because I'm feeling it on that level, this is where the change happens.
Yeah.
It does start within. And then obviously then it's like, and then we need to be out there and we need to be talking about it and taking action. I was listening to Rachel Cargill talk the other day on Emma Gannon's podcast, and she was asked, Emma said, I'm sorry for asking this question because I know it annoys Renny Edo Lodge, but how can we be good allies? And she was like, okay, she said, I've got an equation, and it's knowledge plus compassion, plus action.
Lovely.
You can't just have the knowledge and the compassion, and that's where people are comfortable in there.
Yeah.
You have to also take action.
Yeah.
And you have to speak up. Now, I feel like I'm working towards there.
Yeah.
I'm getting there. I am definitely not putting myself out there as an example of how, look at me, I'm very much learning and very much at the start of my journey. But that, it's taking the action as well, isn't it? And speaking up.
I also think there are lots of people who like to self-proclaim that they are allies and are speaking up when they haven't done the work, when they don't have the knowledge.
Yeah.
And that again is coming from a place of ego, and it's it might be looked at as what we call as white saviorism, but there is a huge piece around knowledge and listening and sitting in discomfort that you have to do first. It doesn't mean that you can't speak up and say, you know what, I'm still on this journey. I don't know it all yet. it doesn't mean that you can only speak up when you've done all those things.
Yeah.
But the listening and the knowledge is key. And I think if you are wanting to speak up, or you feel like that you have influence in a space to speak up, then it's okay to say, I'm still on this journey.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm doing to support you. How can I support you better? Because what I don't want is people say, well, I'm not there yet. And then no one speaks up because they're all on this journey, which we've already said is a life's work.
Right to the very end.
I'm 93.
Years old, I've got something to say.
So don't use it. So my, I guess what I'm trying to say, don't use not knowing it all as an excuse not to speak up. When it feels right, when it feels like you've got influence, when it feels like you can use the power of your privilege to advocate, or to open the door for, you know, open up the table or the floor for somebody, or to speak up on a topic or issue, just own that. You know, I'm on this journey, and I'm on the journey to being a better ally. And, you know, this is what I have to say. And, you know, how, you know, if there's anything I can do better, let me know. But speaking from a place of truth rather than trying to be perfect, because it's
that
not
never
helpful.
Works.
It's not helpful. And also, again, it stops people taking action, because they're like, I'm on the journey and it's life's work.
Let's talk about the course, because for me, that is the place to start. Like, I encourage anyone who's listening and thinking, right, okay, I want to do this work, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the course. What inspired you to create the course in the first place?
People were asking. So initially, so I've always done diversity training, so courses with businesses, small business owners, and a lot of my diversity is intersectional. So when I go and I speak about diversity, whilst I will talk about race because it's the one that intersects with all of them, I'm talking about LGBTQ, I'm talking about disability, age, and giving people tools to embed them within their business to make it a more welcoming and inclusive space. So I've always done that. I've always probably, gosh, I don't even know how many, probably trained over 250 businesses.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've been doing that for a while.
Right.
And as sort of, I guess, as there was a shift in the socio-political climate, this conversation about race has become more prevalent. And we're also seeing more overt acts of hate. And so there was just this anguish, like, what can we do about this?
Yeah.
So people say, can you put on a workshop on how to be a better ally? And it was just so empty. It's like, how can I do an hour workshop on how to be a better ally without the foundation?
Yeah.
Like, most people still don't know about our race, the full extent of history, because it's not taught in school. It's not taught in school.
Yeah.
So I was like, there were just missing components for me. And then I started, people started coming to me, and then we're seeing sort of Layla Sayard speaking up on it. And people were asking, so I said, you know what, let me do an online course, because in terms of labor, it's less labor intensive for me to hold that space for people online, because a lot of this work is around self-interrogation. So I can talk to you, I can give you the tools, but you have to do the work.
Yeah.
So I felt that that was a better way to reach people and to get to the depth better than a one-day workshop or... Yeah. So it was...
Because there's a lot in that course.
There's a lot. And so, you know, I think the next steps will be that there will be days where we have sort of anti-racism self-care days, and, you know, activism days, and days where we can bring these conversations from online and connect with like-minded people who are doing the work. But the core of the work has to come from you. And I felt that that was the best way I could do it, and also reach wider pool of people if it's online than, you know, being in London or doing a workshop in Birmingham or whatever.
Yeah. And I definitely do feel that there is, maybe because I'm tuning into it, because I'm looking for it as well.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel that there is, at the moment, there is a rising up of white people saying, okay,
I'm ready.
Let's do this work.
Yeah.
I think also, for me anyway, it never occurred to me, because I certainly didn't want to hear this, it never occurred to me that the work needed to be done in a work.
Yes.
You know, so I felt helpless. Like, what can I do? And that's like, oh gosh.
Oh God, I wish I'd never asked.
Oh no. And the nothing but that.
I'm not ready. No, guilt, shame, guilt, shame.
Oh, God, there's so much of it. And like, oh, just there's just so much bad news.
Yeah.
You have to look out too. But it is so worth it. And there was someone who is doing your course, and you put a quote up about from them the other day, and they said it's like swallowing really horrible tasting medicine, but it does you a lot of good. And it is. It's like, but you know, the fact that I can go, oh, I think I'm going to take a break for this for now and yeah. step back into my white privilege bubble.
That's just a privilege.
The extent of my white privilege. So it's just like, okay. Let's, yeah. you know, get back to it. And I go gently with it because I also not using this as a stick to beat myself with.
Exactly.
Which could very easily do.
And that doesn't help. And that's one of the, so, you know, because I come from a background in mental health, I'm also very much around, you also need to be aware of when you have the capacity to do this work.
Yeah.
And when you don't.
Yeah.
So self-awareness really is key. And also not whipping yourself. It's not your fault. And even if it was, even if you were somebody who has been intentionally racist to somebody and now you're wanting to do better, now you know. So what are you going to do about it now? What are you consciously going to do about it now? And so the sort of whipping and the shame, it doesn't help enable transformation. And so what I would say is, you know, if you're feeling shame around it, it's a normal response. It's a human yeah. condition that we don't embrace much. It's a normal response. It's okay. It will pass. And speaking up, you know what, I'm feeling shame around this, and just honoring it.
Yeah.
Breathing into it and then letting it go. Or finding, you know, partners, colleagues, anyone who you trust who's like-minded, and just speaking to them about it. About the shame you're feeling around whatever, because it's speaking about shame that stops shame from existing and taking yeah, over.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, there is a big part of it, particularly at the beginning, is of sitting with the discomfort, yeah. Sitting with the shame, but also not allowing that to then be the thing that you then get caught up in your own shame, because that's also not helping.
No.
Again, oh, back to you.
You're centering.
Oh, back to you again. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, I think I've said a number of times to you, like, onwards. Okay. Let's keep going. But I think, and it does pass, you know,
yeah.
I feel like I have been through the thorniest parts of it, because now I can be with the shame. Well, there's less shame. There's more acceptance.
Great.
Of, this is, we've all got it in us.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's just, okay, just keep, yeah, being with it. And, you know, each layer there's a new
surprise.
No.
Oh, hello.
Oh, no, no. And also, and looking back and being like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no. I said, oh, no, I, you know, stuff yeah. that I've said. Like, and I'll say this, I had an amazing boss when I was in my early 20s. She was a black woman from America. And I remember turning around to her one day, and what we're talking about, saying, I don't know, I don't see you as black. And she looked at me, she said, that's the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. And I don't even, this, but I don't know what I was, like I had, because if I look into it now, and so there's a lot of like, okay, deep, scratch the surface, we're going in, we're going under, we're going to the unconscious stuff.
Yes, we are.
Very uncomfortable. But I suppose for me, I just, because she, to me, seemed like, so I related to her so much that therefore she stopped being the other.
Sure.
And she became what felt normal to me.
Yes.
And so much yes. of this work has been around me going, it's not like I walk around going, anyone of another skin color, you know, I'm secretly, you know, I'm, you know, I don't know, attacking you secretly. But it's just, but for me, it's a lot around other.
Yeah.
Oh. And you know what I've also done? I've started naming. So when we do work around like the inner critic, call yeah. it the shitty committee. And it really helps to name my shitty committee or certain characters, like the nasty one or the,
oh, or the judgmental one.
The judgmental yeah, yeah. one, the perfectionist one. Oh, my inner drive is completely bonkers. Where's Kate? She's completely mad. It's nothing to do with any other part of myself. So I've named the sort of that racism in me, that yes. like suspicion of other, oh, that doesn't belong here. Kind of, she's called Mildred. Now,
lovely.
Anyone who is called Mildred, I apologize. This is no reflection on you, but I had to choose a name. Anyway, and she's just, I've got a whole, she like wears a lot of beige. She's got very tight set perm.
I love like, it.
I've got a whole thing, because then I'll notice still, I'll be walking by and, oh, that's a bit, that's a bit different. You know, and it's just like, whether it's, I'll just notice it. I'll just notice it in me because I've tuned into it now. I'm not afraid to tune into it now. And it's just catching it. Say, for example, I'm like deepest, darkest Devon walking along a field and I see, you know, a black couple walking towards me. I might go, oh, yeah, that's a bit unusual.
Yeah.
And it's just like, all right, Mildred. Yeah.
Calm down.
Look at that. You know, sort of thing. And it's just as those things come up. And it's, but I would never have noticed that before. It wasn't like I was walking around knowing that. I would have been like, yeah, cool, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But now it's tuning into what's going on. There are voices under the surface that you can squash them down and make and push them into the dark unconscious, but it's there.
It's there. And it's the way in which our brain has been designed to work from evolution. Our brain was designed to put things in boxes, to be able to recognize them when there was a threat by somebody who was from a different tribe or might cause you harm. And so our brain has been taught to do that, to protect ourselves. And obviously it's got us in a bit of a bind now because none of us are running away from sort of cavemen or wild animals. And we do. We continue to put people in boxes. So again, it's just being aware of it and honouring it and letting it pass.
Yeah.
I love that you've named yours Mildred. I think that's a brilliant way to detach as well and just add a bit of lightness to it without judgment.
But also I feel like I'm educating Mildred and she's being like, oh, I see. All right. And it's not just about, and it isn't, and you know, and I can apply it to all sorts of judgments I'll make about people of colour, shape, size, able, you know, abilities, like all sorts
of things.
How they talk,
how they sound.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that I found helpful and found quite entertaining. But it also just helps me to own it.
Yeah. And recognise it when it's happening.
And recognise it and not try and squash it down and pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit more about white privilege. Mm-hmm. So if someone listening is just like, what is this white privilege? What is this white privilege thing? I mean, do you know what? When I first started hearing about white privilege, and I think again it was probably on Emma Gannon's podcast, and she's probably talking to June Sarpong about her book, which I think is amazing. And I think she said, if you're learning for the first time about white privilege, it shows how deep in white privilege you are. And I was like, here we go again. Yes. Okay. But white privilege, how do you describe it to someone who's new to this topic?
Okay. So white privilege has been around, well, the term has been around since the 1960s, and it was first coined by a white man called Theodore Allen, and it basically means white skin privilege. So it's not to say that you, if you are white, have never experienced hardship or have never had difficult times. It's the societal privileges that you automatically get as a result of the colour of your skin based in correlation to those who are black or a person of colour. They do not have the same societal privileges. Yeah. So that's it in sort of black and white. It's the skin privileges that you get when you are living in a white majority country.
Yeah, and that you don't even, and if you are white skinned, you're not even aware.
Not even aware
of it. So it's things like, and I know you talk about it in the course, but I've also spoken about it with friends of mine, how difficult it is to get a hairdresser who can deal with Afro hair.
I mean, that's one of the ones I use all the time because I'll use this example. So hubby and I used to live in London.
Yeah.
And so I had the pick of black hairdressers. It's the melting pot, you know, major cities are the melting pot for being able to have choice when you're looking for a hairdresser who is competent with working with Afro hair.
Yeah.
We then decided to move to the East Midlands. And before we moved, I was Googling to find out if there was racism within the area. That was one of the criteria I was searching for to see if it would be safe for us as a black couple. And that was 2016. I was Googling whether there was far-right movements in the area we were trying to move to. So that's something, as a white person, you probably don't have to Google, is this area racist? And then having moved there, And it was no surprise to me. There are no hairdressers within the vicinity that do that are competent with working with or trained to work with Afro hair.
Yeah.
So I do a 70-mile round trip. So I do 140 miles to get my hair done. It's just basic everyday things, everyday othering that reminds you that somehow your value as a human being is less.
Do you know, I was speaking to a hairstylist who said that you have two levels of hair
training.
Level one,
yep.
You learn to do all sorts of hair types except for afro yep. and curly.
Yep.
And level two, which most people don't bother doing,
yep.
is afro and curly.
Yep. And I've said a million times to these schools, why are you not making that? Why is it not compulsory? Why is it optional? It should be compulsory. You should be churning out people who are skilled to work with any hair type. If they then decide that they only want to work with certain hair type, like many Afro-Caribbean hairdressers do, they saw a niche, so they only work with Afro-Caribbean hair, that's different. But you should be trained, because I haven't got the stats in front of me, but the amount of money black women in particular spend on their hair, it's you're losing money
yeah.
more than anything. Even if you don't care about the humanitarian aspect of including yeah. different types of people, it's a multi-million, if not billion-dollar industry. I reckon it's probably billion.
Yeah.
Check Google.
Tights.
Yeah.
Can't buy concealer.
Flesh
color. Yeah. I'm planning my the petition for this. I wasn't sure whether I should mention on the podcast. I don't want them to get wind of the fact that I think we're safe. I think it'll be all right. Playmobil,
yeah.
massive global toy company. I wanted to get black and brown figures for my child to play with, like just in an urban, modern day urban scene. And I went and there I looked up family. There's only one family. That family is white. If you try and get black or brown figures that aren't historical, because there's loads in the historical section, then it's very hard. You'll get one or two in random sets. Mm-hmm. Children are always without a parent. They're like the token friend.
Yeah.
So I contact them and I said, I want to get people of colour, figures of colour for my child to play with. And they told me that I could make up... they had their, if I wanted to make an ethnic family, I should choose from their spare parts. They sent me codes. And then they said, and I was just like, are you kidding me? They didn't even send me links. So if I want the white family, I go to their website, I click, it goes into cart and I buy it. If I want to get a black family, I have to write to them, have to wait for them to respond by email. I then have to be sent a list of codes
yep.
with no links
yep.
to go and find them. And then they will send me a quote of how much that will cost. And then I have to call. And I did it because A, I wanted the figures, but B, because I would have stopped. The moment they said,
of course.
The moment they said in the spare parts, I was so offended
yeah.
and so horrified.
Yeah.
They didn't know what color I was either. Yeah.
They don't care.
So I was just like, I got them because I wanted to see how far I had to go to get them. So now I'm writing a petition. It's taken me ages because I want it to be good and I don't know how to write a petition. Anyway, I've got people helping. By the time this podcast goes out, I want that petition to be up.
Great.
Because my point is also, who are the people? Why are the toy companies not being held accountable? The world that they are creating for our children is both racist
yep.
and it's sexist. I could get onto that, but focused on the sort of the racism line. And they even their pictures of children playing, there's a white boy and there's a mixed race girl. And I thought, wow, she's not finding herself in this world at all.
No.
And I just, yeah.
Children start forming racial bias as young as 3 years old. So even if we're not talking to our children about race, they're picking up on programming that's telling them one is better than the other already. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why representation is so important, not only for black children of colour to see themselves represented, because when you don't, or when you only see negative stereotypes, that can lead to something called internalised racism, which leads to self-hate and low self-esteem. And it's not to say that every person of colour or every black child has that, but that's the byproduct of not being represented.
Yeah.
So that's why I talk so passionately about it, because it starts from 3 years old, they're already forming racial bias. So if you're only... if you're only giving your children books to read, toys to play with, dolls that are not diverse, they're already starting to form a worldview and they're already forming biases. And by five, I think, is the age, they're already choosing playmates in the playgroup based on race.
Oh, God, don't.
So books, children's toys,
yep.
Disney, they are powerful, powerful influences.
Children's books. Yep. So I wanted to get children's books that represented different children of colour. I ended up ordering them from America,
yep.
from a specialist bookshop.
Yep.
I just, again, my shock is because of how long I've been in my bubble of white privilege. Yeah. Because you say that to any person of colour, like,
yeah, mm-hmm. we know, because we've, yeah, you know, we've I had to, all, well, I didn't in the end because I refused, but when I got engaged, the only magazines that were representative of black people were in America, and I was not going to spend £15 on a magazine, so I didn't do it. So, yeah, it's...
So that led you to starting your business.
It did.
I mean, we really need 2 hours of this podcast. We definitely need a part two. But yeah, tell us about that.
So New Bride is it's more than a wedding blog now. It started as a wedding blog and I got engaged, and I was also going through my NLP training when I got engaged. I was going through all of this self-growth and a lot about my race and how I felt about myself was coming up during this training, as well as doing, it was the beginning stage of me working therapeutically in mental health and disability. So I was going through my own growth and my own work. So this stuff was right at the top. And then I got engaged and I didn't know much about the wedding industry, went to buy magazines, and very quickly, within 24 hours, I realized there was a huge silence. I remember flicking through, I bought two magazines and I flicked through both of them, and there was not one single person of color, not even somebody who is mixed race or white passing. It was just white,
yeah.
Mostly blonde. Probably weren't any redheads, maybe a few brunettes thrown in. Everyone was a size 8 or 10, and there was just no diversity of any shape or form. Mm. And I thought, right, Nova, this race stuff is really in your mind right now because you're working through it. So just take a beat. Are you being paranoid? Maybe that's just the issue. So I waited for the following month or the following installment, and I didn't buy them this time. I flicked through and it was exactly the same. By this point, I'd also started planning. So I'm going to venues. They're giving me brochures. All of the brochures are of white couples. All of the designers' dresses on models are on white women. All of the women on the catwalk were white. And I was like, this is... And then the tipping point for me was getting goodie bags at all of these wedding fairs with tanning products in. And I'm like, this is bullshit. People are not even expecting me as a person who's British and black to be coming through the door. And I'm ready now to spend my money. And it was just this silence. And I was like, no more. And so New Bride was basically born for me to rant and to express my dissatisfaction and just to document my planning. And then other people just were resonating with the message. And then the next thing, you know, brands were coming saying, like, how can we, you know, sponsor you? Can we have a banner ad? I'm like, I don't know what a banner ad is. I'm just going to Google. And then it just took on this life of its own. And this happened whilst I was still working in mental health. And
wow.
So it was just a side piece. And then I thought, let me see how I feel after we're married. And if the energy is still there, let's see what we can do with it. And New Bride has been the catalyst to me being a diversity campaigner and now an anti-racism educator and speaking up on issues that matter and empowering people to lead by example and be the change. I did that with starting New Bride and it's continued. Yeah. And I was able to leave my job.
Nova, I have so many more questions. I want to talk about so much more. But I think, is there anything left you feel you want to say before we tell people exactly where to go to sign up to your course and to follow you on Instagram, which everyone must do?
Just release the judgment and release any shame or guilt around this conversation. We have been born and raised in a society that has normalized white supremacy, and there are byproducts of that within all of us, within how we show up, how we treat people, how we behave, the decisions we make, who we like, who we fear. And the change won't happen until individual people collectively start recognizing their power in that change. Mm. The silent majority recognizing they are part of the change by doing this work in whatever way feels right, but just by starting and doing it. And to remove any guilt or fragility and fear around white privilege and recognizing that you can use your white privilege as a motherfucking superpower. Basically, I'm sorry for swearing, but I couldn't think of any other way to say that. Use it as your superpower and help be part of change.
Nova, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You are just, oh my God, you're even better in person. Oh, I just want more and more and more. You will have a podcast one. Yes, I mean, this is just the beginning. But okay, so where do people go to follow you and to sign up to the course and get started doing this powerful work?
You can follow me and sign up to the course. Head over to novareid.com. That's NOVAREID.com. And just click the link that says services and you'll see that online anti-racism link there. You can also find me on Instagram, NovareidOfficial. I do weekly anti-racism work there for those of you who might want to ease your way in. Yeah. And links to join the course are also in my Instagram profile. So I very much hope to see more incredible beings there.
Yeah, head that way. I will be there.
Yeah, thank
you. I turn up for the uncomfortable conversations.
You do, but it's, you know what, it's such a joy having you as part of the course and just connecting with you, because there's just freedom in talking about these things, and you're already experiencing the changes, and you've really barely gotten started.
Yeah, and it's true, I really have barely got started. I'm already experiencing the changes and realizing how powerful this work, it's healing work.
Very.
And it's, yeah, I just think it's something for us all to start doing. And yeah, I'm excited to see more and more people. This become like, this is what everyone does.
Absolutely.
You know, has their, whatever course is going on and is doing this work, and that we're rising up together, yeah, all of us, and really bringing about change. So the courage and the strength it takes for you to be one of the leaders in this, I'm in awe and I thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.